I teach computer science.
Okay.
Back up. So, thank you. So I indeed teach CS50, and I took this class myself as a freshman. It was the fall of 1996, but I almost didn't. In fact, I got to campus, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do, to be honest. I kind of gravitated toward, I think, things I knew. Like, I thought back on high school, and I kind of liked history, really liked constitutional law, and, you know, kind of sort of liked English. And so I very naturally, that my freshman year, 1995, gravitated toward things with which I was familiar. And I swear to God, I was one of these students where I went into one of my first meetings with my freshman proctor, or RA, who lives in the dorms with you, and I can't believe she humored this. I went in with like a 32-course proposal with what I wanted to do in like that first week or two of college, most of which I ended up not actually taking. And thank God, it wasn't until sophomore year that honestly I finally got up the nerve and got up the confidence to sort of veer off of that path that just felt most comfortable. And I put my toes in unfamiliar waters and finally got up the nerve to take a class called CS50, our Introduction to Computer Science for concentrators and non-concentrators. And that was only because at the time, the professor let me sign up for it pass-fail, because I indeed had this fear of failure. It was something unfamiliar to me. I thought back on high school, and it was one of those areas, one of those kinds of classes to beware. Frankly, it didn't even seem all that enthralling. I still remember looking through like the glass window of the computer lab in my high school, just seeing all of my friends kind of hunkered over computer terminals, like typing away. It just didn't seem interesting, didn't seem social, didn't seem germane. And so when I finally got to campus and put my toes in these waters and shop CS50, that I realized that this whole field, CS, was actually more familiar to me than I thought. And the reality is that it sort of opens your eyes to intuitions and ideas that you yourself might already be familiar with. You just kind of need to learn how to harness it and think about it. And indeed, almost all of us have these kinds of devices in our pockets or laptops or desktops in our homes. And for the most part, we only do what people let us do with them, right? We download an app or some piece of software and we use that because someone else has made it for us. And yet, with this same machine and with this same device, can I actually build things and create and solve problems of my own? And they don't even need to be all that unfamiliar. So this is an old school problem, like looking someone up in a phone book. If we imagine this is a really big white pages with like 1,000 pages, and I'm looking for someone like Mike Smith, this isn't all that different from what happens nowadays on our iPhones and Android devices, where if you pull up your contacts app, you probably see all of your friends and family alphabetically by first name or last name, and that's essentially what we have in this technology here. And now if I wanted to find Mike Smith, I could sort of start at the beginning of this problem, look down at the page, and if he's not there, which indeed he's not in the A section, I might turn a page, turn a page, turn a page, and not see Mike Smith, and so I continue proceeding one more page at a time. This is incredibly tedious, it's incredibly slow, but it is correct, because if Mike Smith is in this phone book, I'll eventually reach him. Now, of course, I could optimize this. I could think a little harder about it, how to solve this problem, not just correctly, but well, efficiently, and I could start to do something like 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, and so forth. That's gonna get me through the problem twice as fast and find Mike twice as fast, but it's potentially flawed. There's a flaw, right, if Mike accidentally ends up sandwiched between two pages, so I might at least have to double back. If maybe I hit the T section in the book, I might have to double back one page just to double check that I didn't blow past him. But that, too, is not something any of us are gonna do in this room. All of us already have the intuition for sort of opening this problem to the middle, looking down, realizing, oh, I'm in the M section, so Mike must clearly be in the right half of this phone book, and so we can tear the problem in half, throw, if I may, half of it away. And now what's interesting about this problem is that it's fundamentally the same, but it's gone from 1,000 pages to 500, but the algorithm, the step-by-step instructions that I can now apply myself are the same. Go roughly to the middle, look down, and I see, oh, I'm now in the T section, so I've gone a little too far, and so I can again tear the problem in half, throw that half of the problem away, and now I've got 250 pages. And if I repeat down to 125, and again, and again, and again, until ultimately, theoretically, we end up with just one page on which Mike either is or is not. And what I realized early on is that that is what computer science actually is. It's about problem solving. And we might bring to bear computers and programming on those problems, but those computers are really just tools that we use and means to an end. Computer science is not itself about programming, but about problem solving. And yet it took me years until graduate school, when I was back here again, and this time dabbling not just in, or focusing not just in computer science, but dabbling in an elective. I enrolled as an auditor in Anthropology 1010, Introduction to Archaeology. I admittedly had this sort of mid-grad school crisis where I wondered, why am I becoming a computer scientist? Like, archaeology is a lot more interesting, a lot more fun, or so I thought sort of halfway through my thesis work or aspirations. But what archaeology opened my eyes to was like the interconnections of computer science with other fields. In fact, it's such a simple thing to imagine going on Google Maps or Google Earth these days, for instance, to pull up something like the place we're currently in, searching for something like Sanders Theater, and then thanks to technology being flown down to where we are right now. But in Anthro 1010, I had the opportunity to see my professors actually leverage this technology in a much more compelling academic way, whereby we might have searched for the Great Pyramids, zooming halfway across the world, zooming down pretty low thanks to satellite imagery, and actually be able to see not just well-known artifacts like this, but archaeological digs from which my professor that semester had just come back. And he was able to give us this aerial view and really open our eyes, thanks to software and thanks to computer science and its outgrowths, to actually exploring yet other problems still. And so it's not just CS plus archaeology. I also realized quickly that I could apply CS to Frosh IM. So rewind a few years. Freshman intramural sports for some time didn't even have a website. Back in the day, we signed up for sports and walked across the yard, slid them under the doors of the proctors and registered. Well, I instead discovered that I could actually apply my newfound skills and savvy from CS50 and CS51 and follow-on courses and actually solve that problem with software. But more generally, do we have this sort of opportunity to combine CS with other things, CS plus X, if you were, where X, a variable, might be the arts or business or engineering, the humanities, law, medicine, sciences, applied sciences, social sciences, or any number of other fields. In fact, at the end of this particular course, this introductory course, CS50, do we end the semester with a campus-wide celebration of what the students in that class achieve over the course of just one semester? Students who were just like you sitting here some year ago. In fact, in CS50, 53% of the students this past year were first year, 62% of those are among those they describe as less comfortable with the idea of even being in a CS class, not unlike myself some years ago. 68% have never even taken a CS course, and yet at the end of the semester at this so-called CS50 fair are expressions like this all around the room. We're all several hundred students in the class come together with a few thousand students and faculty and staff across campus to celebrate in exactly what students have accomplished by a bit of new exposure to a field that they might not remain in. Indeed, a majority of students in CS50 and in introductory computer science don't stay within CS but take these ideas and new skills back to problems of their own domain in a number of those other fields. In fact, just to give you a glimpse of some of this past year where CS plus X was in fact personified in some of our very students, Lyra and Sarah here implemented an iPhone app that actually enabled people who were colorblind to effectively see colors by taking a photograph of something and then telling them what the actual color is thanks to the camera on the phone. Nick here implemented software that used image recognition to take printed old school music like this, run it through software that figured out what those notes were so that he could then change it to be targeted at one instrument instead of the other for which it was designed. Allison and Rita actually implemented a site for Harvard student agencies on campus here to facilitate the pairing of Harvard students with high school students for tutoring opportunities. Angela and Isabel, virtual postering, an event board website so that students could publicize and bring themselves together across campus. Steven and Studi here, a stock simulator iPhone app so that you could actually simulate buys and sells of stocks. Chris and Anchi here, an app that actually allowed you to compose a reading list for yourself by scanning ISBNs and other such decodes on the back of a book. And then lastly, folks like Lucas here, who actually you can see him talking into an Amazon Alexa at top right, commanding his computer to do something as though it's a car, simulating the sorts of things that are very much in trend in industry today. And then Billy and Sam and Victor here, they wrote a website that allows you to mimic text. So you read in and scan in text from well-known dignitaries or politicians or authors, and you can generate text that's very much reminiscent of and statistically equivalent to the kind of language those humans might have written themselves. Jeanette and Penn and Mary here implementing a website that allowed students to actually improve their bill of health by actually dropping the ramen and getting recommendations for food. Alice and Ian, anonymous chat service for peer counselors. Luke, one of our students at Yale, visualizations of NBA players missed or hit shots from the court. Mylin and Maria, a website that allowed them to actually stop themselves from using websites like Facebook and other such distractions so that they could actually focus on their own studies. And some of our students even did something like this using virtual reality, the ability to put on headsets like this these days and be able to look up, down, left, right, and actually see a virtual space that isn't physically here but is recorded effectively or created in software so that you can explore other areas beyond your present tense. And indeed, this is what we ourselves in CS50 focused on exploring this year. CS plus X, where X is education, considering how we might bring to bear this technology to bring high school students, adult learners from around the world to a place like this that we're all fortunate to enjoy and experience and have as a place of learning, and yet bring it to others virtually to around the world. In fact, this is a clip from our first lecture this past year, and if you can see at the top there is a special camera that we put right in the middle of Sanders Theater here, and it's got 8 lenses that look up, down, left, right, forward, back, and via these 8 lenses do we end up getting essentially 8 videos that, thanks to CS50's team behind the scenes, do we stitch together. So all of these individual circles you see become just part of a sphere that create this virtual world around. And so long as you have a headset like this or another headset like this, Google Cardboard, can you actually achieve this and experience this yourself? In fact, we ourselves in CS50 and our team of TFs and CAs and producers decided to go beyond our own comfort zone this past year and define X in this case to be an opportunity where X is dance and X is music. And thanks to CS50's own Lauren Scully and our production team, thanks to some of our friends on campus, the Harvard Veritones, one of the a cappella groups on campus, did we head up to the Harvard Dance Studio just a few weeks ago, build a 360-degree set like this, plant that special camera right in the middle and capture the experience of song and dance in this virtual space. In fact, I think we have just a minute. This is perhaps best explained through experience and not through retelling. Do we have a moment for one volunteer from the audience? From the audience? Okay, come on up. Yeah. What's your name? Jessica. Jessica, come on up. And as you see, this young man here also jumped up on stage. This is Connor, who was where you sat 2 years ago at Visitas. This was him in that same first lecture, and has joined CS50's team since to help us bring this together. Jessica, nice to meet you. So Connor's going to get you set up here. And the one disclaimer is that you have to be, and I should have said this before, you have to have, one, be comfortable appearing here on camera, and two, do you like surprises too?
I guess so.
Okay, we'll take that. And so what you're about to see is just a minute's clip from what we think is the first ever collegiate virtual reality recording of an a cappella performance by the same group on campus featuring the Veritones' Naya Avery. And in 3 dimensions here, as I switch our screen over, will Jessica, our brave volunteer, be able to look up, down, left, or right? And if we could dim the lights at this point, will you see on the overhead, thanks to the wire she's connected to, what she's experiencing? And we can increase the volume too. And there's Naya. So you'll notice as she looks up and down, you're seeing exactly what she's seeing in this dance studio.
To make you want me, but we're not supposed to be, and the truth will always haunt me, even though it set me free. You're haunting me all in my brain. Turn out the lights and I'll offer your name. Losing the doubt and I'm shouting your name out. Why do you wanna put me through the pain? I get the